Welcome to Become an Idol. I'm Dr. Robin Sargent, owner of Idol Courses. This is the place where newbies come to learn and veterans share their knowledge. I have here with me today Amanda Nguyen, and she is the owner of Amanda LXD and the founder of The Learning Jam. But Amanda, there is so much more to you and who you are and your background. So will you please do a better job of introducing yourself?
Oh, hello, Robert, and hello, Idol Courses listeners or Idol listeners. I am Amanda Nguyen. That's how you pronounce my last name. And I have been in the learning and organizational development space for over 12 years now. And I recently left Canva as a learning experience designer and learning experience design craft coach. And so now I'm just on a journey to focus on sharing my life's work and my LXD craft to other budding learning designers and learning enthusiasts. Yeah, so that's where I am today and where I'm at.
And I just admired your work from afar for such a long time. If you guys want to go check her out, AmandaLXD.com is as simple of a web address that you can go get to, and you'll see the donuts and the personality that exudes from every single thing that you do. And you've worked for some of those big companies, and of course,
yeah,
Idol loves Canva. I love Canva. And so, Canva. I mean, we have to mention before we get into our main topic today, which is creativity, because you are one of the most creative people in this space that I've seen. I want to talk a little bit about tell us about working for Canva, just for my own.
Of course. Yeah, it was amazing. No, truly. It truly was. It was probably some of the best years that I've ever had in my career. Canva is exactly how you envision it externally from like a marketing standpoint, from others looking in. And inside Canva, there's even more magic. Like, I'm not just saying that because I used to work there, and, you know, leaving was a very hard decision for me because I needed to do something for me. But the team, being able to work with such high-performing people, high-performing teams filled with so much diverse perspective and experiences, really allows you to create quality experiences and solutions. Like, it truly drives you. So, but they're all about having fun as well and great supportive leaders. And I've done probably some of my best work there as well. And to be able to also coach other, you know, learning designers in the team to share my craft and to help shape and mold the direction of how learning experiences are designed in Canva was very rewarding for me. So it was freaking amazing. I loved it. Like, it was fun, but lots of hard work. So you can only imagine working in high-performing teams and a high-performing organization, the quality of work that's pumped out. It's quite intensely fun. It's, you know, your tech companies, yeah, they're all like that. And it's the beauty of it all. I do love fast pace, so it suited me well. Yeah.
And you had to build all of your learning experience designs in Canva?
So when I first started, so funny story, my tech stack is quite vast. I love all my tools and using the right tools to craft certain things. When I first started Canva, typically I would always use the Adobe Creative Cloud Suite and all of my other tools. I wasn't allowed to use the Adobe Creative Cloud Suite. So I had all my tools. No. So none of that was stripped away from me. So what that made me do was really challenge myself in how I can use Canva to still create beautiful learning experiences for our target audience. And it was great. I spent nearly 2 years there breaking Canva back and forth, working with the tech team, working with my team, but really showcasing how we could really utilize Canva for educational purposes. And it was a great, you know, we were really customer zero for the education space inside the learning team, which is fantastic. So we were able to, yeah, learn how to create learning experiences in Canva alone. It was really fun.
And so I bet just narrowing down your tools to one forced you to get even more creative in the solution
so much
came up with?
Yeah, absolutely. Like from, you know, designing interactive guides, microsites through to animations, explainer videos, talking head presentations. Like I really stretched my limit and my capacity and also my team's limit to really see how we could really create a bespoke learning design and experience without using the templates that Canva has already created. So it was hard at first, but then afterwards I'm like, oh yeah, you can just hack your way around Canva. Like that's the beauty of the tool itself. It's so intuitive, it's fun, simple and easy to use. And yeah, why not? Like I'm all about being an efficient designer. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of creativity, I think that's really what I want to focus on today. And I want to talk about some of the things that you do to be creative or what your process is, because that's my favorite aspect. When people ask me like, what do you love about instructional design or learning and development? It's always that you get to be half researcher and half artist. And of course,
the
art of being creative is my favorite thing. And so
absolutely,
such a creative person. I'd love for you to share just how you do it and what you focus on and give it to us.
Yeah, of course. I think sometimes when a lot of people see my work, they see the end product and the end result of the beauty. But I actually spend exactly what you say, half research, learning design, and then I go and focus on the development and the prototyping. So my workflow is I would dedicate a lot of time to do the learning design, the discovery, understanding who my intended audience is and ways that I could engage with them with quality solutions and experiences. I'll work through with the stakeholder to figure out, you know, what kind of options are available to us, and then we'll start testing. So then I would rapid prototype. That's my kind of jam and style. I would make sure that I would just rough mock up some ideas to just get my ideas going, but co-create that with my stakeholders. And then from there, I'll bring it to life with the right tool. But in terms of helping me spark my creativity to think about the tools, I draw a lot of inspiration from Pinterest because it's easy, it's quick, it's all there for you. I love Pinterest, other beautiful UI websites such as awards.com, Behance, Dribbble. I really like to just cherry pick and create like a little mood board for me with the style and look and feel. I love to look at designs and pull them apart. So I might pick certain elements and sections of that design, pull that out and move it into my mood board to really help me map out what I'm trying to create. But that's usually my workflow. I just like to draw inspiration before I start to develop anything at all. And if I were to develop anything, it'll be a prototype first to just test with, not just my stakeholders, but with the users, so the learners as well, to see if it's hitting the right marks. And then I'll lay on all the flesh. You know, it's like building a house. You got to make sure you plan and build that foundation first before you start layering on all the beautiful furnishings and whatnot. But that's naturally my workflow. I just take my time. I love dedicating time to just let my mind wander, play around with the palette, play around with the parameters. So I really like to understand what the parameter is in terms of the branding, the tools that we need to use, the parameters around accessibility. How can our audience, you know, interact and engage with the colors, the fonts, like everything in between. Like I really make sure I understand the parameters, because if not, natural Amanda would go, here you go, here's vomit unicorn donuts and rainbows on a page, because I love that and that's my passion. But that probably doesn't really fly or doesn't really connect with my target audience. So I always take my time to understand the parameters, and that's how you can be quite innovative and also creative. When you understand the parameters, you can work within that and start thinking about ways of how to navigate that as well. Yeah.
I always kind of liken it to when you're creating a party, it's a lot easier to decorate and set up your party when you have a theme. And it's the same kind of thing
with
creativity, right? Like when you have the parameters, you have a theme, which is all your research that you've done. It's a lot easier to be creative within that theme.
Oh, I can tell you, as a scrappy designer that I was before, years and years and years and years ago, I used to do it the opposite way. And it kicked me up the butt so many times because I didn't plan. I was like, yeah, designing new shiny tools, development. And I'll go and be like, vomit on the page. Yeah. Fireworks, sparks, everything. And then I'll present it. And then people will be like, what is this? And I'm like, it's literally Amanda's vomit with no planning. So plan first, learning design. It's so important. But then I guess with people looking at the learning design component, you can sit there and spend a lot of time with your content, of course, and really understanding the key goals of your learners. But then if you don't pick the right tool or the right visual design approach and storytelling technique and all the really juicy parts to create your output, you can have the best content and blueprint in the world, but if you have a crap builder, it's not going to go really well. But vice versa, you can have the most beautiful looking product and result, but if the innards and the structure and the planning and the design and the content is not hitting the mark, your learners aren't going to attain the goal, the mindset, the skills or behavior that you're trying to go for as well. So it's having that fine balance of, yeah, that's, I hope I'm articulating that correctly. Works well with my brain.
And for me, it's like, I have to eat my vegetables to get to the dessert. And for me, vegetables are, you've got to do the research and the design and the testing. And then you get dessert, which for me, and it sounds like for you, is developing and getting creative and actually bringing it to life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to know more about, you mentioned prototypes. And so a lot of our listeners are people who are brand new instructional designers, or they've never been one before. Mm-hmm. And so people get, the idea of prototype gets a little fuzzy, I think,
of course,
those people. And so will you just clarify, like, what you mean by prototype? Like,
yeah,
specific, like, how much are you showing?
Great question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, a prototype can be three different levels. So when you're working with your stakeholders, and let's say you're planning the learning design side of things, getting your content, structure, whatever your goals are with that, you can then move into a mock-up, which is a static and flat visual, just to give your stakeholders a little taste tester. Because remember, us as learning development professionals, we're the expert in the learning design. However, sometimes with our stakeholders, they don't have a background in learning development, or our subject matter experts don't have a background in learning. And so if we give them a document, a storyboard or learning design blueprint, they'll be like, huh, what is this? I don't understand. There's so many boxes, there's so much text, and there's so many like learning objectives and outcomes and success measures. Like, what is this? So what I like to do is I then create a mock-up, which is a static visual. So my stakeholders and SMEs can get a taste tester of what the end product can potentially look like. But I also mark that this is just for you to get a taste tester. It's not the final product. Second component to that is, as I start creating a prototype, which is moving that content and all the innards into a structure that is usable, just so the stakeholders and SMEs can then navigate around it. It could be a 30-second video of a 2-minute video that I'm designing. So I would design the layout and then maybe 10, like an intro, and then like 10 or 15 seconds of the animation or the explainer video. And then I send it to the stakeholder, like, hey, here's the first prototype walkthrough. This is what it looks like. Or if it's an interactive guide, I will set up like the layout with some of the buttons and just give them a taste tester of what their product could look like. And I can also test it with them, my learners. Again, similar concepts. If it's an e-learning module, I would just give them a rough like layout, apply their branding, just so they can just feel it. It's like that, what's that tangibleness that they can look and feel? So they're the kind, that's what a prototype is for me. It's not the complete build. And sometimes a lot of developers, they like to break it down to like a beta and alpha build, which is another term for like smaller build, not too much buttons, just basic looking scratch surface. And then this, maybe a week later, you can start tinkering away. You can do the alpha prototype, which is a bit more beefy, a bit more media, maybe one example of a complex interaction. And then you test with your user and audience, and then you can go to the complete build afterwards. So iteratively build. What I find is the more that I work on projects with various assets or even one big asset, I like to co-design, co-create, and get as much feedback as I can from my stakeholders. You have to iterate. Like, you cannot. I found that if you design from learning design part straight to the development and then give people to feedback, sometimes you miss the mark. They might have not been brought on the journey to understand, okay, wait, why is this already nearly complete? I haven't been brought on. I haven't tested the product yet. Like, we haven't engaged it or tested with the users yet. Like, how do you know that this is actually going to work? So co-design, co-create, get feedback, be iterative, best approach. That's how I do it.
Yeah. And so you've gone into like some of your creativity about where you go and you get ideas from. But I imagine that some of it is more than just looking at other things online, right?
Yeah.
What are some other ways you go and find your inspiration?
So I actually, I was talking to this about my coaches because she was like to me, Amanda, where do you get inspiration? How do you learn design? And I'm like, if I'm being really, really honest, I take zero inspiration from our industry. And I go completely, I only go to design conferences, marketing conferences, and products conferences to really help me understand the design thinking process, for me to really understand how can I really focus on usability, accessibility, and also really touching on that human connection with the learning experience that I'm creating for someone, like really touching on, okay, this is going to help me with my career. Oh, okay, this is going to help me perform better in my job. Oh, this is going to help me do this more efficiently and faster. Like really putting the intended audience, the target audience at the center of the design. So a human-centered design approach. So I draw all of the inspiration from other practitioners and also other amazing designers that I follow. So if you follow me on Instagram, all the people that I follow are just designers. I only follow designers or creatives, architects. I love the way that they build and design usability of homes. And I like to place that context into when I'm developing and designing a learning experience as well, or learning solution. It's all the touch points. It's how can I make sure that I not just create a one-off thing. A learning experience to me has a cadence. It has multiple touch points. It's not just for your target audience. It's their support system. So it's their leaders. It's their peers. It's the organization. So how do you as a learning designer create those support touch points so that they actually attain their goal? So it's a lot. And that's something that I'm very, very passionate about. I know sometimes it might just look like I design pretty things, but it's intentional design. Like there's so much that goes behind that design and the way that it's launched into the business and integrated and embedded. I would love if I could share any advice to new instructional designers, learning designers, or anyone who's interested in this space. Start understanding the design thinking process. That will help you understand how you can solve problems better than instead of going straight to solution mode or becoming an order taker as part of your role in an organization. Really understand that there is more to learning than just an e-learning. And if it is an e-learning, understand that it is an awareness builder. How do you actually actively provide your audience with key touch points to help them shift their behavior, shift their mindset, actually perform in their role? Like what are the key metrics there? Like what are you supporting their lead to help support them? What are you supporting their team members and their peers in that group to help support them? Like it's like our brain is like an onion. There's so many layers of learning. You can't just provide someone with an e-learning. That's just one layer of an onion. There's 10 layers underneath. How are you going to help them tap in those layers of learning so that they can actually go, understand, I can do this more confidently, I can do this more efficiently and perform better. So get inspiration, draw inspiration from other industries, take things out of context, which is outside of your learning field, and put it back into context. That's how I've learned and bootlegged my whole career. Like truly, yeah. I'm an ex-graffiti artist as well. So, and I think that's why I love colors. Like, I love colors and I understand color psychology. I understand what really helps people bring that spring to them. I played with so much colors my whole life and I love art and I pride myself in where that creativity comes from as well is I fucking love colors.
Okay. I think that's a great segue. And I didn't ask you at the beginning. I want to ask you now.
Yeah, go for it.
You say that your career has been bootlegged, which I think.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to know, how did you become, how'd you get into this field? How'd you come
back? Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, if I rewind time in Amanda's world, I want to let everyone know that it was never sunshine, rainbows, and lollipops. Like, sometimes I pinch myself with the amount of love that I get on LinkedIn. It was never like that at all. Like, when I first started in my career, I was at university and everyone else around me had their parents and had, you know, their uncles and aunts already working in corporate. I came from like a low socioeconomical background. Like, my parents were working in warehouses. I didn't grow up wealthy or rich or privileged enough to get those opportunities. So I tried my hardest to go and put myself out there to get an internship. And I got rejected, even for free work. I got rejected and I didn't even get an opportunity to do free work. So I tried and I was working retail, I was trying to do so many things at once. And finally, I got an opportunity at a fashion recruitment agency, just on the phones, like getting my foot into recruitment, because I knew that recruitment will help me get into human resources. And that was what I studied in uni. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a HR manager. But then I wanted to be an accountant. And then I wanted to be, oh my God, all sorts of things. And I failed accounting. It was really funny. That was fun, funny, funny times. So from there, I stayed there for 6 months and it was unpaid. And I learned and I tried to learn everything as I could to just get that letter of recommendation. And then I finally got another job, which was, again, a 6 month contract in a recruitment agency. And I'm like, I really want to get into HR. Like, I want it. It's my dream. Is it my dream? I didn't really know that time. And then so I finally got a HR job. And the first week I was stuck in meetings with the advisor. I was a coordinator and I was helping her scribe performance discussions and she was firing people. And then I was like traumatized. I was like, oh my God, is this going to be my life? Is this going to be my life for the rest of my life? Am I just going to be, oh my gosh, in these difficult conversations, people are crying in front of me. And I'm like, here, just take my small step. Like, what do I do? He's like, why are you firing me? I have a family. And I'm like, is this what HR people do? I'm sure it's not just that. Back then it was, but now it's different. This was 12 years ago, everyone. So I didn't know. And then my whole life just was like, okay, where do I go now? And then I sat next to a learning and development consultant and she blew my mind. I got exposed to leadership development, onboarding, all of the great nooks and crannies working within a learning and development team. And then from there, I just started working in learning development for the next few years. And I then went on a sabbatical because I burnt out. And that sabbatical led me to explore and tap back into my creative side. I did a lot of like art commissions, like during my time as an intern and stuff, just doing murals and artworks and stuff like that on the side, because that's where my love was, just playing with colors, even through high school to now. And yeah, that 9 month sabbatical made me think about, how do I blend my passion for design, art, colors, everything like that into learning and development, because I thought I needed to change my career into the design space and become like a UI designer or UX designer. But it wasn't, my heart wasn't really there. I love organizational workplace learning. It's been my bread and butter for so long. So I was like, what opportunities are there for me? So I'm like, oh, design, learning development. And I started like Googling and I found instructional design. Oh yeah, I forgot that that existed, and e-learning development. So now I want to show you what I did for my first job interview. So I had a role opening that came up on the ether and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I want to apply. They required me to provide a sample of work. I had no sample of work. This is where I bootlegged my way into the career, guys. I had no sample. I had nothing but just my brain and a laptop. And they're like, we need an example. And I'm like, okay. So I downloaded a free trial of Storyline. Never used Storyline in my life, by the way, opens it. And then I was thinking about, okay, if I'm in learning development in this organization, what is a common e-learning module that they'd like to see? And I'm like, bullying and harassment makes sense to me. So I designed a random like bullying and harassment game on an island. Mm-hmm. And you could just, and I was just playing around with the tool. And I'm like, I have one day to do this. So I just sat down, learned the tool roughly in a day, sent them a prototype and like the content that I use. I'm like, here you go. I did the interview. Obviously they hired me because of my personality, because I'm amazing.
I agree.
And then they gave me the job and then I was beside myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally bootlegged my way into this career. Like I had no idea. Cause I was facilitating in as a generalist LNOD person or learning development person. I was facilitating, I was designing workshops, I was running orientation, doing like leadership programs and stuff. Like I didn't really sat down to do e-learning development that like we had a dedicated person team and I wanted to learn it, but my focus was elsewhere. And so, yeah, from there, I was focusing on instructional design, looking for learning experience design roles. And learning experience design for me was a new area. I didn't know that you could actually deeply apply human-centered design, design thinking, and design practices into learning. I thought it was just the traditional ADDIE methodology. That's all I knew. And again, bootleg that, Googled instructional design methodologies, and I found out it was ADDIE. I'm like, cool, I just use that because I don't know anything else. But there was an opportunity for me in 2016, Niels Flohr. He is a learning experience design pioneer, right? I saved up my money and he was launching his first masterclass in LXD. This was in 2016. And I was like, I'm going to go. I need to learn about this learning LXD, whatever it is. I'm curious. Yes. And so I flew over to the Netherlands with my own money that I saved. And I caught a train to Nijmegen, which is like a bit south of near Amsterdam. And I just met him, random people from around the world, experiencing his first ever masterclass to become a learning experience designer and learning about the LXD craft. And it blew my mind. Blew my mind that you are able to apply so many disciplines from various pockets, merge it together, create your own toolkit and toolbox, and just deliver learning experiences. Like I think sometimes we need to, not need to, it's actually okay to cherry pick, for me that is, and this is how I operate. I love to draw inspiration from others, but then mush it in a way that makes sense for me so that I could deliver quality work for the organization that I'm working for. You can sit there and label so many methodologies, label practices and stuff like that, but if you're not really delivering quality learning solutions or experiences to your target audience and really understanding them and understanding how you can provide a solution that delivers value to the organization so they can pivot forward, it doesn't matter how many learning theories and all that techniques and learning styles, you know, like none of that's like it to me. It's semantics. Like you can go in as long as you understand who your target audience is, the tools that you have, assess the parameters, you can bootleg your way. I'm sorry to all those amazing academies and schools and educations out there. I love y'all. But if I can do it, you can too. Yeah.
And I run a school. So yeah.
I'm going so rogue. I'm so sorry. But it's all I'm saying is that when you're passionate about something, if you are passionate about becoming an instructional designer, if you are passionate about becoming a learning experience designer, head of learning, whatever it is, keep that, hold that passion, hold that compass, and just make actions and steps towards it. Because that's exactly what I did for 12 years of my career. Like I started as an intern. I literally started intern and I tried my hardest because I knew like, Amanda, you need an internship. I didn't care that other people around me had easy tickets into working at their parents' company or, you know, getting a handout from their uncle and aunt because they already are the head of learning or head of HR. I didn't get that opportunity, but I was really passionate about what I wanted to achieve. I connected with people, and also on LinkedIn. Guys, I've been on LinkedIn for 10 years and I remember trying to connect with HR advisors and HR coordinators and anyone in the HR space, and I got rejected. I got obliterated. They were like, "Who are you? Do I know you?" And I got rejected so much, but that didn't stop me from keep on going. Like, it didn't stop me. Like, I always think back of, oh my gosh, I just... the awkwardness of trying to reach out to someone to have like a 5-10 minute catch up just so I could learn about their career, and they completely rejected me. Like, imagine that. But so that's why now when people reach out to me, I will always give them the time. Anyone, like, I know some people might be listening in and they have reached out to me before. I might not respond to you tomorrow, but I might respond to you 2 weeks later, but I always make the time to respond to you, because I know how hard it is to get given an opportunity or be seen that you're worthy to get an opportunity and know that you are worthy. It's just not the right organization for you. They're missing out on you. I'm telling you, you are so worthy of achieving things. And if it's a no from someone or a rejection from organization, stuff them. They're not worthy of your time. You know, like, flip it around. Like, you can, I've went through so many interviews, so many, yeah. Y'all can do it. I am telling you, it is not impossible. Just put your mind to it. Yeah. Easier said than done, but it's all achievable.
Yeah. And so for those who don't want to scrape and scratch and dig and, you know, wander around for 9 months figuring out on your own, then you can go to school.
Yeah, it's not exactly it. Yeah, go join idle courses. Duh. If I knew, honestly, but I didn't have that. Y'all weren't around. So I had to bootleg my way around. But perfect segue. Amazing, Robin. But I think that's the beauty of these amazing like courses and cohorts and bootcamp, like everything that's existing right now, is that you have an opportunity. You get to choose what works for you in what kind of goals you want to achieve. If you want to go and complete a tertiary education that's going to be 2, 3, or 4 years, go for it. If that is your heart and you're calling, you genuinely want to learn that side of things, oh my gosh, yes, go for it. Like, I'm not saying don't go for it. Like, go for it. It's just not for me personally as Amanda, not for me. But if you want to do a short course or a long course that's available online, go for it as well. Nurture your brain and your soul with things that will help you achieve the goals that you want. And you know that best. Like, you will know what works for you or not. Yeah. Follow your own path. Design your own path in your own journey.
Yeah. That's so, I want to hear, Amanda, your best. I mean, you've been getting lots of good advice. So what's your final advice for those that want to become an idol?
Oh, if you want to become an idol, what would that look like for you? And advice?
Maybe something about mindset.
Perfect. It's my favorite topic. Growth mindset. Every challenge, every obstacle, everything that you're feeling, everything that comes fly your way, think about how you can take courageous action and move into that learning zone or that growth zone so you can transform. And the hardest thing is taking that first step, whatever it may be, becoming an idol, if you want to become an artist, a designer, whatever you like in life. And when you have that gut feeling where it's, you're like anxious about it, it's a sign that, ooh, if you take that first step and that courageous action, it's just going to release these amazing feelings because you did it on your own. So you can, you definitely can. Know that you're worthy, know that you're ready, you got this, and just go out there and create stuff. You only live once. Why not? Give it a crack. It's fine.
I love it. And so I think we've talked a little bit, but Amanda, just to wrap up, where are the places that you want to send people to find you and connect with you?
Oh yeah. Find me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to bite. Ask me questions. I'll be more than happy to answer them. And if I'm rambling on too much today, it's actually 12 in the morning right now. So my brain's like, whoa. So definitely ask me any questions, or if you need clarity on anything, reach out. And find me on www.amandalxd.com or on my Instagram at amanda.lxd. I offer coaching and mentoring services in LXD at the moment. So this is new. I haven't actually announced that on LinkedIn yet. So Robin and amazing podcast crew, you guys can hear it first. I am ready to upload and share my life's work. You know, I've been in the space for so long now, and I'm just ready to help uplift and share my ways of working. And if that inspires you to build your toolkit, hell yeah, I'm all for that. Build your own toolkit. That's my advice. Don't get so sucked into all the shiny tools and stuff like that out there. You can create your own toolkit and do what works for you.
That's beautiful. And I just feel like those people that come and work with you are going to be so blessed just being around you and what you've gone through these years, and even and especially your attitude around the whole thing. So thank you so much, man, for being here with me, for being on the Become an Idol podcast. It was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin. Pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find the show notes for this episode at idlecourses.com. If you like this podcast and you want to become an instructional designer, an online learning developer, join me in the Idle Courses Academy, where you'll learn to build all the assets you need to land your first instructional design job, early access to this podcast, tutorials for how to use the e-learning authoring tools, templates for everything course building, and paid instructional design experience opportunities. Go to idlecourses.com/academy and enroll or get on the wait list. Now get out there and build transcendent courses.